West Denver,
a Salem Media Group station.
He's a Denver native, born of Denver natives,
a former chief deputy DA. He is an active Colorado trial lawyer who has also worked in the media for decades. Bright, independent, and full of fun. He is part of 710 KNUS now. This is the Craig Silverman Show.
What a day, what a life, what a beautiful world. Nowhere is more beautiful than in the southwest part of our great state of Colorado. Towns like Telluride, Durango, Montrose, Cortez, they're all represented by Senator Ellen Roberts, who gets welcomed to a very special place by virtue of her graduating the finest law school in America, the CU Law School, in 1986, practicing law. She's one of my colleagues. She represents her district, Senate District 6, in the Colorado State Legislature, and she gets welcomed to this special place.
The Craig Silverman Show welcomes you to Craig's Lawyers Lounge.
Oh, it's a place where prominent lawyers come to tell their best war stories, kick back, relax. Senator Ellen Roberts, welcome to Craig's Lawyers Lounge. We have a team of paralegals standing by to get you anything you might desire as we talk about the great events of the world over the next hour. What can we bring you?
Well, let's see. I'd pick either some hot tea with lemon or some Irish whiskey.
You know what? We will get both for you because that's just okay. The way we roll in Craig's Lawyer's Lounge. Are you going to start with the whiskey and chase it with the hot tea or vice versa?
No, I think you start with the whiskey and chase it with the tea.
Am I right about Southwest Colorado being one of the prettiest places in the world?
You absolutely are. I mean, Colorado has so many beautiful places, but having just this past week driven from Durango to Montrose, up to Craig and back for water committee meetings, I can say with some pride and absolutely nothing that I did about it, it is the most beautiful corner of the state.
And as we speak to you today, describe your location. Are you in Southwest Colorado, and what does the Ellen Roberts homestead look like?
Well, I'm sitting at my kitchen table, and I live in a custom log home that my husband built, and I'm looking out into the woods that's about a half mile from a national forest boundary. So I am very lucky to live where I do.
And where do you do your grocery shopping?
In Durango. It's about 8 miles into town. You don't run in just for a gallon of milk, but you plan ahead.
Wow, that sounds beautiful. Thanks for carving out some time on a Saturday morning to speak with us. Tell us about where you grew up and how you ended up 8 miles outside of Durango.
Well, I grew up actually in the Northeast, although my great-grandparents homesteaded up in the Northeast corner of Colorado in the late 1800s. Unfortunately, they did not survive in terms of being sheep ranchers, so they headed back east, and my great-grandfather had been a dairy farmer, so he went back into dairy farming in Pennsylvania. I grew up in the Northeast, went to college back there, came out at 21, and always knew I would live on the Rocky Mountain spine. Didn't know quite which state it would be, but knew I would be out here, and Colorado was my first choice, and was fortunate enough to get a job at Rocky Mountain National Park as a seasonal park ranger. Spent a few years there and also was a lift operator at Winter Park Ski Area. Went to law school in Boulder, and then we made our way, after being in Grand County for about 7 years, we came down to Durango in 89 and been here ever since.
How did you decide to become a lawyer? What was your inspiration?
You know, I was always interested in politics. I think even as a teenager, thought a little bit about law school. There are no lawyers in my family by background. My dad was a teacher. My mom worked in a hospital billing office. So I didn't get a whole lot of respect for wanting to go to law school, but I think it, to me, it always seemed like a great way to work on a lot of different issues, and I do like to talk, so I also seem to satisfy that.
Well, you've talked
Some
your way into
like
a,
to argue.
Well, you've talked your way into a powerful position. You're Senate President pro tem. You're in the leadership. You're a Republican. But before you got into politics, what kind of law did you practice?
Well, I was simultaneously raising my kids and with my husband, but wanting to be able to be there for a lot of school activities and doctor's appointments. So I looked for a transactional practice. I did mostly estate planning, probate, small business formation, kind of a small town practice. I actually thought trial work would be fun, but it wasn't very conducive to raising my kids at the same time. So I that's what I did for 20 years and enjoyed it, found every day a little bit different, and always learning, which was a lot of fun.
So how did you get into politics?
I got into politics partly because I was very frustrated with the state laws that particularly had to do with health care issues. And there was a state representative, Mark Larson, from this corner, who I think one day I was challenging him about making some changes to state law, and he said, well, why don't you help me do that? And I worked on some bills that had to do with hospice and palliative care. I had my dad passed away fairly early at 66 from colon cancer, and I had a front row seat, unfortunately, with him, watching how that process worked. And I've always been very determined that the individual should have a lot of say about the kind of care they receive. And so anyway, from that, I spent some time at the Capitol, and I found it pretty interesting. And when Mark was term limited out, I ran for his seat. Spent 4 years in the House, and then in 2010 ran for the Senate and won that seat.
And now you're in a leadership position. And how long until you're term limited again?
Well, term limit will hit me in 2018.
In the meantime, you are a powerful person under the Gold Dome at Colfax and Lincoln. And tell everybody what committees you serve on.
Well, I chair Judiciary Committee. I'm Vice Chair of Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Energy. Those are our regular committees during the session. Then I chair the Health Benefit Exchange Oversight Committee, and I chair the Water Resources Review Committee. So keeping pretty busy with all that, I'm on a few other committees as well, the Racial Profiling Task Force that just was created. And that's in part from the Judiciary Committee work that I had done. So a lot of diverse issues. I really, some people, when they get to the state legislature, really pick a particular area to focus on. I think in part from my law background, I was more interested in a broader spectrum of issues. And so it does take a lot of work to try and get it. The depth of knowledge and experience that you want in a particular area if you're going to pick more than one. But I think it makes my job more interesting, and I think it makes me more valuable to the people I serve just because I have a broader range of issues.
Right, and I get the impression that down at the Capitol they say, don't worry, Ellen Roberts will do it. She's smart. You've gotten involved in so many things. I'm thinking about the loss of your father. I'm so sorry that that happened. You were in the legislature when Obamacare was proposed, voted in by the federal government. What was your attitude toward Obamacare before it was passed? And then how did you react as a Colorado legislator once it was enacted?
Well, I wasn't a fan of Obamacare, and the reason I wasn't, in large part, was I found it fiscally unsustainable. And I think it's only appropriate that we look at the costs of programs that we take on, whether it's at the state or federal level or even the local level. We know that in 1965, when LBJ put Medicaid and Medicare into place, it's a very popular programs, both of them, but the fiscal issues that it raises at the state level That is the Medicaid program, Medicare being at the federal level, but it's crushing our state budget. And I didn't see anything in what was called originally the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I think somebody in marketing said drop the patient protection and just have it say Affordable Care Act. My struggle is to call it affordable care is not accurate. It's unaffordable. There was nothing put in there that would really make it sustainable. And we're experiencing that at the state capitol as more and more of our state budget gets consumed in Medicaid spending. It's causing all sorts of ripple effects out to K-12 and transportation funding, et cetera. So I think it's something we're going to struggle mightily with the state-run exchange. We're still seeing significant problems with that, including financials. So there'll be plenty of work to do into the future.
Well, you're so smart and knowledgeable. Our special guest, President Pro Tem Senator Ellen Roberts, and she's had a front row seat to Obamacare. And once Obamacare was passed on the federal level, the states had to react. And according to Jonathan Gruber and other architects of that plan, they essentially said, you've got to set up your own state exchange or you're not going to get, your citizens are going to be screwed. They're not going to get any money. So Colorado had a decision to make whether to set up a state exchange or follow the lead of some of our neighbors to the east, I think Kansas, Nebraska, other states that said, we don't care what you're encouraging or forcing us to do. We're not going to spend the money on a state exchange. So Colorado had a decision to make. Tell us about that decision-making process and how it feels now that the Supreme Court has said, never mind, it was just a big bluff. You guys in Kansas and other states that didn't set up an exchange, that's all right. You still get Obamacare. Tell us about the history of it and whether Colorado ended up wasting a lot of money setting up a state exchange, believing the threat of the initial legislation.
Well, here's what I think has become a common habit of people in D.C., and that is they say to the states, you have a choice, and then at the end of the day, there is no real choice according to them. The scenario they lay out is, if you don't do what we want you to do, then we're going to do it for you. So it gets quite twisted, and I think you can see this in not just healthcare, but in other areas. I've been there at the state capitol 9 years, and I would say in my early years, I actually fell for that. I actually thought that, one, they meant what they said, but that the hammer would always be worse if D.C. stepped in. And many times I think that's true because they're less connected to the states at the state level. But they try and force our hand. And in the case of the exchange, it was one of those where they said, if you don't do it, we're going to do it for you. And many good people thought that, okay, then the state of Colorado has to figure this out. So then the federal government sprinkled millions and millions of dollars around the states who would decide to do that, set up their own exchange. So it wasn't state dollars spent, but in Colorado, it's closing in on almost $200 million that was spent to set up our state-run exchange. The problem is the timeline that the federal government put in front of the states. To me, I did not see any way that we could do a good job in such a short time frame to create something so complex. And it tied straight into federal law. So it was really, to me, it was incongruous to say that we were going to create something that would be just for Colorado because it had to tie into Obamacare with all the mandates that came with that. So I would say there are a few good things that I think are in Obamacare. I think it was always difficult for people to have some sort of cost limitation, not knowing what kind of health care issues they might run into. I think guaranteed issue, if somebody wanted to be able to purchase health insurance, they shouldn't have been excluded from being able to do that. And sometimes they came with a health history that made it impossible before Obamacare. But I think there are so many things and it was such a special interest soup, really. Everybody who was a key player in the healthcare industries got their piece of the pie.
Right, big corporations
right.
making a lot of money. And the
right.
Democrats, the administration went fishing for Republicans because they needed some Republicans in Colorado because you guys, I think at the time, had control of both houses, or was it just one house?
Just a house, yeah.
But as they went fishing for Republicans, didn't they fish out Amy Stevens to pass AmyCare? And in retrospect, was that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, you're right, they did. And it wasn't just Amy. There were a number of House Republicans who supported that bill as well. And I guess I would say that what I've seen happen is they only have to find one person from the other side of the aisle, and then it becomes a bipartisan bill. So it doesn't matter whether it had one or 15 or 25, they were going to call it bipartisan. I would note that the federal government did the same thing, and they were desperately trying to find some Senate Republicans, U.S. Senate Republicans, to support the Unaffordable Care Act, mm-hmm. and couldn't even find Susan Collins or Olympia Snow wouldn't sign on to it. So I think it's a common trick or tricks, maybe not the right word, but I think in search of the bipartisan label, they find people. And I know Amy Stevens, and I respect her a lot. I think she made a choice whether she would say today that the exchange turned out the way she anticipated it would, or given the U.S. Supreme Court decision, maybe she wouldn't have been a supporter of it. But I think her intentions were good. I just would say that we, to some degree, again, on multiple topics, have gotten coerced by Washington, D.C. And really, the 10th Amendment and states' rights are a very important component of our country operating the way the founders wanted it to.
Right. And
we need to remember that.
Yeah, instead of calling it a trick, let's call it a tactic. And I think it gets back to what Ted Cruz had to say. You can't help but think that Barack Obama and his team are in bed with big business and some corporations that have profited huge from Obamacare. And you can't help but think that some of those moneyed interests with those lobbyists were lobbying Republicans such as you, and they found a receptive audience in Amy Stevens. And I think that was not good for her political career. But that's not the only issue. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Roberts about another issue. I like Ellen Roberts. She's independent, fair-minded, and she was thinking about running for U.S. Senate. Maybe we can persuade her to reconsider. But she kind of ran afoul of some Republicans who hold the hardest of hard line on the abortion issue. And that includes the morning after pill, IUDs. And somehow Ellen Roberts, before she could even take off on this campaign, got a little twisted on that issue. Well, thanks for being in Craig's Lawyers Lounge.